to the Puck Guys Podcast, the best place for top hockey news and insight with, of course, a little West Coast bias. Now, here are your hosts, Patrick Mahoney and Jason Lamb.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Puck Guys Podcast.
Hey there, lady.
What's up, man?
How you doing?
Good. It's Monday. No one has to work, so it's good.
We got this day off. Thank you, Memorial Day, and thank you for all those that made the ultimate sacrifice.
Oh, that's for real. People kind of skip over that aspect of what the holiday is all about. At least in the United States, it's what we all celebrate here.
Yep.
So we got the Stanley Cup Finals starting today. And you got to make sure you don't put the S on the end because the NHL wants you to know that it's final, not finals.
I don't understand that unless they're playing one game. Then I understand it.
Well, it's like when you're...
It's like the Super Bowl. I get it. It's just one game. It's, you know.
Or we're like when you're in college or high school and it's like finals week.
Yeah.
It's because you have more than one final, but they don't call it final week.
Yeah.
Right? So the NHL is kind of just not falling in line with the rest of the world the way the order of things. They just like to be different.
So this is how the podcast is going to start. You have a problem with that they took off the S on finals.
I have to. Yeah. They had to clarify it. I think they did it a couple seasons ago. They were just like, no, it's the final.
You are the epitome of people on social media picking out the stupidest thing to get upset about.
It's good to troll. So shout out to thegruelingtruth.net. Yes. That's where you can find our show amongst other sporting articles, blogs, podcasts, gruelingtruth.net. Mike and everyone over there does good work for us and the rest of the team. You can also find the Fourth Line Podcast, another hockey podcast. They just have some articles up on the Stanley Cup Final. Go check those out. Check out our podcast there, too. Not a Stanley Cup Final that we predicted would happen at the beginning.
I
don't think anyone really thought that we would see the Vegas Golden Knights against the Washington Capitals.
Yeah.
The Capitals, no one predicted them getting past Pittsburgh ever, and they did.
Uh-huh.
Now let's kind of throw back a little bit to last week where they closed out the Tampa Bay Lightning in seven games. A very uneventful game seven if you're a Tampa fan. You expected after being shut out in game six in Washington to come home.
I mean, the one game five, that's kind of usually the stranglehold. Generally, if a team wins a game five and it's a 3-2 series, they go on to win about 80% of the time. So this one was one of those odd reversals, a la what the Anaheim Ducks were known for quite some time, as winning game five at home and then losing on the road and then losing at home, and usually in a horrific fashion. And this was no different. Tampa Bay just got completely shut down. They did not look like the team that had won game five, that had looked good in the first two rounds. They kind of were shell-shocked a little bit. They just couldn't get anything. They had opportunities. Washington had a lot of turnovers. Holtby's just was good. And, you know, the few chances they got, he kind of shut it down. They didn't seem to put as many shots towards the net as they probably should have. It seemed like they were trying to look for a late guy or that other guy, and then it resulted in maybe missed opportunities.
Well, I mean, the Lightning had 60 shots the last two games, 31 in game six, 29 in game seven.
Yeah.
So it's about average across the board. I mean, if you don't have to be a stats guy to know that. You watch any game, it's usually roughly where
around
your team's going to be.
Yeah.
Just uneventful, though. They didn't get those grade A chances. There was a chance by Killorn and all alone on Holtby, and Holtby just read that shot all the way low blocker and blocked it to the side on a breakaway.
It didn't look very orthodox. He almost kind of lost his balance standing up and making a standing save, essentially, on that one. But, I mean, yeah, to shut him out twice, they'd only been shut out once, I think, in
the last 97 games.
They had only been shut out once.
Yes.
Yeah.
Including postseason and regular season. That's insane.
That's another thing you just couldn't predict happen.
159 minutes and 27 seconds they have been shut out. So game six and game seven.
Yeah.
And then a little bit of game five.
Yeah.
So just not something we saw coming. A high flying offense with Kucherov and Stamkos not being able to break through. Ovi does.
Yeah.
That's the thing we've all been waiting to talk about
is
Alexander Ovechkin coming through on his team. And he's just, there was comments throughout this series that he's kind of taken out, 11 or 12 years of his career out in one postseason? He's just kind of taking out his anger.
See, but it's not a very good narrative. I mean, he does show up in almost all big games in playoffs. He's got amazing numbers. So it's not like it's a guy that just, you know, disappears come playoff time. He's leading his team. It's just his team's never gone this far. And so it's nice. And it's a far, it seems like a departure in their mentality this time around than it has been in the past. It seems like in the past, it's like, dude, this is our window. Needs to happen. It just got ramped up and built up so much. And then once they beat Pittsburgh in the second round this year, it just seemed to flow for them. They won the first two games. Yeah, they lost the next three. But then they didn't care. It was just like, hey, we know we're good. We know we can make this happen. Barry Trotz just taking laps for the team. And the team just seems far more relaxed than they have in the past. And I think that's the same thing Vegas has done, too. It's just a more relaxed attitude. Go have fun. Execute your game. But don't get so caught up in, oh, my God, you know, expectations are so high. So these are two relaxed teams that already exceeded expectations for this season and are just at the point of having fun and seeing who's going to come out on top.
Well, I mean, especially for the Knights.
Yeah.
Wildly exceeding all expectation across the board. I mean, oh, yeah, they're not going to – they'll be, you know, a top 10, or they'll be like 10th or lower in the Western Conference, and they win the division in the Pacific Division and then go to the playoffs. And then, yeah, they're not going to, there's no way they're beating the Kings. Yeah, they sweep the Kings.
Yeah, right.
No way they're beating the Sharks. Sharks. No, they beat the Sharks in six.
Yeah.
And then they go on to play the Jets.
Second best offense in the league.
Unreal.
And beat them in five.
That was the stupid thing. I was, really?
Yeah. You,
really?
You picked Winnipeg, didn't you?
The toughest of all of those. Came down to, I figured there's no way they're rolling past Winnipeg. And then they try to throw it back. Well, Winnipeg had a really tough series against the National Predators. Okay, yes. Yeah. But Winnipeg is, on paper, by far and away a better team than the Knights. Apparently not.
Yeah, almost everywhere, almost every team on paper seems to be better. But the way that team plays, a team defense and a team speed that's relentless, it just, I think, surprises teams. The other thing, I can't remember who it was. It was either Nate Schmidt or England on Vegas, who said this is the Stanley Cup final that was never supposed to happen.
Yeah,
it's like
not.
Everyone just kind of wrote off Washington, saying the window's closed, they missed it, and then obviously Vegas being an expansion team, no one's really ever heard of this. It's actually only the third time an expansion team has actually made it in their inaugural season to the finals.
They were forced back in when St. Louis did it, right?
Yeah, so Toronto did in 1918. Hello, the start of the NHL. Everyone's
right.
An expansion team at that point. And then the other one is St. Louis, when they went from six teams, the original six, and expanded to 12. But they put all the expansion teams in one conference. So someone had to come out of there in their first year. St. Louis actually ended up doing, I think, 3-4 years in a row, lost all of them. They still haven't won their Stanley Cup. But Vegas, I feel, is in a great spot, and it's an amazing story.
So before we break down the series, because that's what people are tuning in want to hear us talk about.
No one's tuning in.
We have to kind of go along the narratives, and then I want to trash some things because it's funny. The narrative of George McPhee being the GM of the Vegas Golden Knights was former GM of the Washington Capitals with Alex Ovechkin. You have Alex Ovechkin versus Marc-Andre Fleury. Yeah. So Ovechkin beats the Penguins, but hasn't beat Marc-Andre Fleury yet.
Yeah.
Fleury is now going to face him in the final. Yep. There's that narrative. Then you have the Caps, who've never been – in this, or haven't been in this position in 20 years. The last time they went to the final was 1998.
And they got swept by Detroit.
Yeah. They have a much better team, I think, and a much better chance now than ever.
They don't have Bondra.
Right. But do they really have that much more of a chance? Look at this Golden Knights team that just ran through the Western Conference like a hot knife through butter, no problem.
Yeah.
Just, we're here. We are.
I'd love to be able to give you a definitive answer of how, or you know, what little thing is going to be the winning factor. It's just not. It's just going to be a very entertaining series, and you'll go through the gauntlet of things that either worked or didn't. And it's, you know, refereeing is going to be crucial and criticized no matter what happens. Even if they do it perfect, they'll criticize something about it. Turnovers will be another big thing. It just depends if which top line shows up, which top goalie outperforms the other one. So it's just like, it's hard to really kind of pick where you're going to go with this, because there's just so many different factors that are all going to factor in, and which one is going to be, you know, more prevalent or more, I guess, important than the other one is tough to pick.
So the other part I want to those are the narratives. The part I want to trash when we get into it is I thought they weren't going to be very good going into the regular season.
Yeah.
Sure. I mean, I thought it was dumb. He could have picked this guy. He could have picked this guy. Could have picked this guy.
You were very critical early on.
And everyone was.
Yeah, not me.
I will definitely put myself in that boat.
I didn't think they were going to do what they were going to do, but I wasn't as critical of the picks that he made.
It's just like, come on.
But I didn't think he'd do anything this season. I thought he set himself up nicely for
within 5 years. It was kind of like his thing. He was like, yeah, within 5 years, we're looking at being ultra competitive.
Yeah.
Why is everyone mad about the draft rules now? Here we are 11 months later, and everyone's like, well, this is BS. My team got ousted by a first-year team, so now I'm going to be really upset and say the draft rules are unfair. And Jonathan Marchessault, you know, how come he got picked up by the Knights? Why did Dale Talon do that? And they were drafted heavily with favoritism to starting a franchise. First off, shut up. Second of all, why shouldn't they have every advantage? They just paid $500 million and bought and built a brand new arena. Why would you want to start a new franchise and suck?
Yeah.
Like, why would you want to spend all those billions of dollars and be like, yeah, let's just finish last. Let's set this team up for failure. It wasn't in the league's best interest to set this team up to fall on their face. Yeah. So they did give them a better advantage than past expansion teams, for sure. But nobody saw this coming. Yeah. Nobody thought these other 30 GMs are going to be this, not all of them, majority of these GMs being this stupid with the way they scouted and managed their players.
Yeah.
And a lot of it was luck. No one thought William Karlsson was going to break out for 43 goals.
Yeah, seriously.
I mean, the guy you can pinpoint a lot on would be Dale Talon. I mean, I want to get rid of my 20-goal scorer, Riley Smith, because he makes $6 million. I want to protect the third-pairing defenseman rather than protect Jonathan Marchessault, who led my team in goal scoring and had a year at 750K.
Yeah.
Dumb.
When I found out they weren't protecting those guys, I was like, you got to be kidding me. That's easy. It's easy pickings. But, to your point, I don't like that whole narrative now where it's, oh, yeah, no, this is NHL, you know, fix this up to make sure it works.
It's unbelievable on Twitter.
Yeah, I mean, it's just all over the place. And, like, these are the same people that 11 months ago were, you know, kind of in the same boat as you, going like, what is this idiot
laughing
doing?
Laughing at George McPhee.
He's a moron. What is he doing? What, he's down to his fifth-string goalie. He's not doing anything. This team is garbage. It's just, you know, they're going to sink so hard. And then because they're not, all of a sudden it's, oh, well, the NHL wants him to win. They gave him just, you know, the best expansion thing, and all the other GMs are kind of in on it, too, and creating, I don't know, conspiracy theories everywhere. But, you know, it's just funny how it flops from, oh, yeah, no, they're idiots, to, wow, they beat my team. It's rigged.
Everyone likes to say they haven't earned it.
Yeah.
They haven't suffered. They haven't earned it. Really, name a guy on that roster you could flat out say doesn't earn this.
Seriously, most of these guys are well-traveled journeymen and playing on different teams, bouncing around, ragtag team that kind of got put together for the most part. Even James Neal and the top guys, he's been all over the place as far as the different teams that he's bounced around to. And I always think if it doesn't matter how long you suffered through bad years to have a good year, who is the best team this year? That is the team that should win the Stanley Cup. And Vegas and Washington are arguably some of the top two teams that deserve to be there. They have outplayed their opponents, and they've done in the playoffs when scoring is supposed to be at, you know, a minimum, and physicality could have been a factor. The grind of the regular season, they've gone through their injury problems, they've done everything that every team had to go through, and they've come out on top, at least out of the Western Conference. So the top two team, in my opinion, they deserve it.
I just don't get it, man. Everywhere you go on Twitter, it's just somebody saying something about how, like,
this
they
is
were
bad
given
for
some
hockey.
Advantage. Oh yeah, they
this
were saying it's bad for the league. The league looks stupid. No, the league looks like geniuses.
It looks like it's the biggest story in sports. I mean, even if you're not in there, you know, I've got friends and family members that don't follow hockey at all. They go, I was hearing something about Vegas. I mean, because you don't do anything with hockey. I'm like, yeah, they're a first expansion team and they're in the finals. And they go, what? That happens? And I'm like, no, it doesn't. But it is. And that's why it's crazy. So I mean, people who don't even care at all about hockey know about it, and that's good for the league. That's not a bad thing.
It's insane to me that anyone tries to pull a negative thing out of this. And you know me, I love to try to bash the league at any, you know, corner possible where I can butt heads with other people's opinions that come from the NHL. But looking at the Knights, there's just, sorry, they're good.
Yeah,
I'm sorry. I don't know what else to tell you. Winnipeg, like we said, had every chance to beat this team and couldn't beat Marc-Andre Fleury.
Yeah.
That was the tell.
Yeah.
They had every chance to get him, and Scheifele got stoned, hit, and Laine hits post, and that is the way hockey goes sometimes.
Yeah.
Goalie still series. Yeah. And if you're going to be mad about them being here because they had some sort of advantage, your GMs for your favorite team could have done something better. Yeah. And you want to talk about the Ducks? I'm real happy to talk about how bad they managed their space by giving Kevin Bieksa no move clause.
Yep.
Here's Stoner a contract. Oh, let's offload him. Oh, now we have to get rid of Theodore. Oh, look, now we have to get rid of Sammy Vatanen because of injuries.
Yeah.
And now the Ducks have slight issues back on the blue line with their depth. It happens. GMs aren't perfect. Mm-hmm. They make mistakes, and most of the GMs got taken advantage of because they didn't know who to protect, and they undervalued players.
Yeah.
So enough of that. I couldn't believe it, man. Like the second that the Knights won, and the NHL on Instagram posted something, and they're like, 12 straight posts about Vegas, talk about bias, blah, blah. I was like, the Caps and Lightning series isn't over yet.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't they talk about this?
Absolutely.
Why wouldn't they get everyone's take, Derek Englund's take, from being a journeyman, never been a top line or second line defenseman really anywhere unless you have to put him up there on depth charts? I mean, that guy's come through and had a much better season. They made Lucas Spisa look good this year, which is impossible.
Hell yeah, they make him look like he's an actual NHL player.
It's unreal. It's insane. No one thought Marc-Andre Fleury had this much left in the tank. He's just career-wise a poor playoff goaltender.
He's
averaging
9-13. He's inconsistent. He's inconsistent.
He had one great season in the playoffs, and this one is the next one. So it's unreal to me. But we got to get to the preview.
Uh-huh.
Let's start with the offense. Mm. So Ovi's line,
yes,
which is Ovechkin, Kuznetsov,
and then Wilson.
Of all people, Tom Wilson, combined 58 points in the playoffs.
Yeah.
Which is insane.
Yeah.
And then you look over at the other side of things in the West, Jonathan Marchessault, William Karlsson, and Riley Smith, who, right?
Yeah.
First line, 47 points, not much behind.
Yeah, and they've played, I think, like four less games,
right.
So there's a little bit less of an opportunity total points-wise. But I think if you count how many games each player has played, they're both roughly about a point a game so for every player on there. So.
And then I like to also add in the blue line on that side of things. So you look at the blue lines, what do they add offensively? Mm-hmm. Vegas hasn't been getting goals from their blue line.
No.
The Caps have been getting offense from their blue line. Orlov and Karlsson have been putting up points in the playoffs. Vegas, not so much.
Yeah.
So, again, same thing for me when I look back at the Winnipeg series.
Yeah.
On paper, this makes no sense for Vegas to get out of the live.
Yeah.
I mean, they're getting offense from everywhere on the Caps. They're getting great goaltending from Holtbeast.
Yeah.
Should be enough.
Good power play.
So, would you give your edge offensively to the Caps?
It's in my opinion, there's two different ways to kind of look at that offense. One is more of that traditional style in that you have Ovechkin as a lethal goal scorer, so sniper, and then you have the playmaker Kuznetsov, and then you have Tom Wilson, more of the muscle, but the guy that can kind of strike a little bit of fear,
in dirty goals too.
He can put in goals. You know, he's put in some points even though he had a suspension early in the playoffs. So that's the quintessential, the old school type, and Vegas is the new type, which is speed, smaller guys, guys that get in on the forecheck and make the other team cough up the puck and then capitalize on those turnovers. So you probably don't see as many points coming from the back end because Vegas usually instills a forechecking game plan that ends up causing turnovers that the defense doesn't necessarily get a touch on. So it kind of depends. And the one thing that Vegas has done better than anybody else is they've done that forecheck and they've done that speed. And that top line, they're all short, quick, agile guys. And when you have that, you can really kind of cause problems and never get that other team to get out of their offensive zone. So on paper, yes, I would have to say if you look at the names, you got to go for Washington in that one. I think they're both completely different offenses, and it's whoever kind of does their game better than the other guys will probably win that. So I'm not as surprised that Vegas's offense couldn't keep up with them.
Just relentless forecheck from Vegas. I mean, we've talked about it all year. They're just when we were talking about the Ducks playing again, it's just nonstop. I was at the Ducks Vegas game early season. It was like I just felt like the Ducks took an extra second to make a decision, and Vegas would catch the puck.
Yeah,
and get right on them, and they'd have to force a turnover.
Yeah,
Vegas hasn't stopped doing that. They've been doing it all through the playoffs,
it's
and no one's been able
season.
To push through them.
Yeah, it's that wave. So yeah, even though the top line is the one that tends to put the puck in the net, that's kind of every line. Every line still has that way of playing where they just don't leave you alone when you have the puck in your own zone. They just keep going. And over time, it kind of eventually wears on you. You make a mistake, and it's that top line that seems to capitalize on those little mistakes.
How annoying was it for Winnipeg to score a goal, and then like within a minute and a half, Vegas would score right back?
Yeah, that's just disheartening. Relentless. Yeah, I mean, that can definitely wear on a team. Especially in a game or a long series. You know,
it's close.
A game where you think you should be winning, like Winnipeg should have been winning most of that series, to have that happen. You know, hey, we're happy. Oh, we're sad again.
And the depth should go to Washington with scoring.
Yeah.
But we'll see. I mean, I got to give a slight edge to the Caps here, just
Vegas
has not been able to be shut down.
Yeah, on offense, on paper, I would say that. I think the fact that Ovi's got 12 goals, I think Marchessault leads the team, and he only has 8 for Vegas. So, it just seems like that offense is still clicking and still showing up. So I think you got to give that edge to
Washington. Of my favorite goals from this postseason, one came from each of these teams. And the one was Ovi to Burakovsky, or no, to Kuznetsov breakaway against Pittsburgh in overtime.
Yeah.
To wrap it up in OT. Did the dirty bird. And then the other
Vegas one. Hold on. Was there a Carlson one? No, you probably do a Marchessault one.
No? It was Riley Smith bar down.
Oh, bar down, yeah. I was
just
like
lasered it by a Hellebuck. Yeah. No chance in hell. He just kind of watched it. Oh, okay.
Like I said, it was just like that one shot from
Yzerman.
Yzerman, 96 against St. Louis, where he just, you know, that perfect angle from behind the net where he shoots it up high and goalie goes and tries to block her and then looks back and goes, really? That went bar down? It's like
Dude.
Just perplexed. And that was the same look Hellebuck had, too. It was like, what the hell? That went in?
Those are my two favorite goals in the playoffs so far.
That
was crazy. And they were game breakers, obviously. Yeah. Those are always fun to watch.
Series breakers.
So on defense, to me, it's not much of a challenge again.
Yeah.
I feel like it's Capitals. Yeah. They have the most experience, the better offensively talented guys. Carlson came into his own this year. He's going to get paid big, big, big dollars this offseason for sure for his breakout year this year.
I'm trying to become his best friend for that reason.
I know.
Reason.
He's like, I need to get a hold of
Come
that guy.
Come on, Wild Bill.
Carlson.
The other Carlson.
Well, the other guy's going to get paid too. That's not shortchanging
either
one of those guys.
I don't care which Carlson.
Yeah, either one.
I just
one with
friends.
A C or one with
I just
a K.
Need friends.
Doesn't matter. So, I mean, looking at the lineups defensively, got to go with the Capitals again. I don't really see much of a challenge, but I mean,
if you're talking straight up defensemen and their ability, yeah, you'd have to go Capitals on that one. They have a little bit more depth season in there, and then they also have, you know, more of that offensive twinkle. But at the same time, Vegas doesn't subscribe to the same standards as most teams on how they play defense. Their defense is usually a combination of their goaltending and team defense, not necessarily the talent of a defenseman per se, but that speed becomes a factor again. This is why they kind of don't give up a whole lot of goals, but there's always guys that are as fast as and offensive as some of the forwards are, and they get the credit for it. They may not get the same credit for their 200 game where they actually are back-checking. They are using their speed to create turnovers and send it the other way so the other team doesn't get that offense. So from a team perspective, I feel Vegas is a very good defensive team in a team sense, not necessarily the defenseman's overall ability to play the position. So in that case, I feel they're much closer, but still on paper, what they can produce and what they have done, the defense of Washington is slightly better. Doesn't mean they're going to win. It just means they're better on paper and they got a little bit more skill.
So the Golden Knights' defense on the offensive side of the puck have accumulated 23 points.
Yeah.
John Carlson alone on Washington has put up 16.
They got an ace.
The Golden Knights actually have scored one more goal with defensemen than the Caps, but the Caps have 16 more points than their defensemen. So, and then just to show you how much of this is going to be a Marc-Andre Fleury series, again, the defense has also shot 192 shots from the Caps compared to the Vegas' 115.
Yeah.
So, and the Knights are giving up on average one more high danger chance against than the Caps and also being outshot by five more shots a game. Those are all small numbers and averages, but they all kind of come together, and I feel like you got to give the Caps the edge again.
Yeah.
Looking at the goaltending side of things, this is – I mean, I would hate to say that Holtby hasn't been amazing.
He has.
But compared to Marc-Andre Fleury, he just hasn't been at that level.
Yeah, exactly. You're playing the best goalie in the playoffs. Holtby has to play against him.
Holtby, he hasn't regressed. He's just gotten better.
Yeah, it's been crazy. And you kind of almost think if it's kind of one of those where, you know, maybe he's a little bit more rested than some of the goalie he's faced.
Well, the injuries over this last season, he was injured too.
He was injured, so he had a little bit less playing time, a little bit more downtime. He's peaking at the right moment. Obviously, his skill set is there, same as Holtby, but you got two different goalies. You got one that's far more technical in Holtby that makes the hard saves look easy, and then you have Marc-Andre Fleury where he can do that, but he's got such good footwork and edge work on his skates that he can do the dramatic saves and, you know, bail himself out and jump across the crease and stop a Mark Scheifele shot on a rebound and get it right in the breadbasket and cover it up. I mean, just those little X factors that sink into players' heads. And then once again, he's playing Ovi. And last year it was Fleury who shut down Washington before Matt Murray could come back from his injury. So there's that other little factor, is that in the head of Ovechkin. But if there's one consistency between any of this, it's that both goalies are playing amazing and that both teams are way more relaxed than most teams that tend to go into the finals. So it'll be interesting to see if one of the goalies can start frustrating the other team and then see how that team reacts to that frustration and see, you know, a little bit of adversity. And then all of a sudden it's not so much fun losing a game or two and in the finals, Stanley Cup final.
Yeah, no, go that way. So I take Caps in six.
I got Vegas at seven.
Ooh.
For the same reasons, I'm tired of being wrong and voting against them. Ever since I've been voting for them, they've been winning. But yeah, I feel especially if it's gone to game six and it comes back to game seven in Vegas, I can't see Vegas losing game seven at home. And I also haven't seen Vegas lose two games in a row all playoffs. So,
well, nobody has.
Yeah, so I mean, home ice is going to be real nice for them, I think. Washington's very capable of doing it. That's why it's going to game seven. This will be a freaking awesome Stanley Cup final.
I hope so. I mean, I think the
Caps.
I don't see how it can't be. Yeah, all the stars are aligning for this.
Yeah.
I mean, both franchises was getting their first Stanley Cup.
Yeah,
it would be amazing either one of these. Yeah. Ovi getting the monkey off his back, all the naysayers. Although he's great, but never that good. He hasn't won a cup.
Never won it. Yeah.
And then now, if he gets it, it'll be like, well, he doesn't have three. Sid has three.
Yeah, like, I'm sure it'll always change.
Good God, it's always something.
Yeah.
And then the Knights, they don't deserve it. Their fans haven't suffered long enough. Why do they get a Stanley Cup?
They have to suffer to enjoy it.
Enjoy the ride.
Yeah.
I was pissed the Ducks got bounced out of the first round. Mm-hmm. I'm going to watch every single one of these games.
For sure.
I don't care. I'm in.
Yeah.
The Caps really have to control Vegas in the first opening minutes of this game. Vegas has done such a good job of coming out and scoring the first goal in a game on their home ice, and then that lid just gets blown off in that arena, and it's hard to come back from, it seems like, from every team. It's just, and they have a way of doing it. It's always their top line.
Yeah.
One of those guys in the top line is scoring in the first 3 to 5 minutes. The Caps got to just find a way to settle the game down and either get the first goal or just kind of just slow the game as much as they can to let that crowd kind of die out.
Yeah,
I don't care what anyone says. I know that the road teams have been dominant in this playoffs.
Yeah. Especially Washington. They're 8-2 on the road in the playoffs.
So, I mean, I just feel like Vegas just, I hate picking against them.
Yeah.
I told you, like, my heart's like, oh, I want Vegas to win, but like, I don't know, man. I want to see Ovi do it.
Yeah, so I guess to ask you a question is like, all right, so two great storylines, unbelievable. Where does your heart lie? What do you want to happen? Not necessarily what do you think will happen. What do you want to happen? Would you rather see Vegas come in as an expansion team and do what no expansion team in sports has done and win a championship their first year? Or that grizzled veteran that everyone loves, it's a showman that has been an ambassador to the game, finally get his shot at, I don't want to say redemption, but, you know, glory. And do you like that more than you like the inaugural season?
I had Vegas
<They're so good.
laughs> winning the cup as long as Ovi wasn't in the final.
Yeah, I would kind of do the same thing. Here's the opposite. If it was any other team but Vegas, I would be 100% Washington. But the fact that Vegas has done what they've done, it blows me away, and I think it's just an insane story to kind of keep going, and I feel bad either way.
That's rough.
It is rough, but I feel so bad for Ovi. Everything he's done has been a great lead up to this moment, and then to fall just a little bit short, you're just sad.
And he's one of those guys. I don't
you
see
want
him
to
ever
succeed.
Leaving the Caps.
Yeah. Oh no, no. He's
going to be there forever.
Oh yeah. He wants to.
Everyone
the first
talks
one.
About him being traded or whatever. Yeah. He's got, I think, 4 more years left on his 13-year deal.
He's good.
I don't think he's going to go anywhere. He's going to retire a Cap. Mm-hmm. I hope he wins. I mean, I really hope the Caps win. Almost like part of me, and this is what you were kind of getting at, is I almost wish he didn't make it to the final.
So
like,
you're
like, cool, Vegas, just
yeah, Vegas over
everybody.
Tampa Bay.
Just
yeah,
everyone destroy. Vegas destroy whoever's in their way, let them win, then everyone can kind of be sad that their team wasn't, you know, part of that run as they all were about their little draft.
You know
what
will happen
party.
If Ovechkin leads the Capitals to Stanley Cup? They'll make a connection between Putin and Trump.
Oh,
that
Lord.
Made this happen with Gary Bettman,
Lord.
So that a Russian captain could bring the Stanley Cup home to the nation's capital.
And there was already the, as we all know in America, the issue between Trump and Putin, right?
Yeah,
and
yeah.
In and D.C., D.C. is going to be...
See, Bettman made this deal with Putin so that, hey, we won't go to the Olympics, but we will give your guy the Stanley Cup.
Stanley Cup.
See, that's how it all works out.
Unbelievable. No one take Jason seriously, please.
This is all. I'm gonna write a report on this. I'm going to send it to somewhere.
Send it to CNN. Breaking news. I'm writing it with a breaking story.
Yeah.
All right, so you got Vegas in 7. I got Caps in 6. Let's see what happens tonight. First game is at 5 o'clock.
So excited.
So let's move on here. Let's briefly touch on a couple of things, some signings that have happened. Evander Kane signs a 7x7, so $49 million over 7 years. With a modified no-move clause, or no-trade clause, rather, he had to submit 3 teams he was willing to be dealt to.
Okay, 3. All right.
Which is odd. I figured that a team would want more room. But apparently the Sharks have 6 players with that same clause in their contract. So the Sharks are comfortable with that. It's what they like.
See, but
that's their clause. That they, hey, if you want a no-trade clause, you have to give us 3 teams.
3 teams.
They
okay. have 6 So they don't do like across thing. The board, no trade, no movement. I don't.
Maybe it's just a no-trade clause.
Yeah, so, well, what I'm thinking, too, is, you know, where does that put them with an expansion to Seattle? Because if it's under the same rules, any person has a no-trade or no-movement clause, you have to protect them.
Yeah.
So now by doing that, if there's an expansion team in the next 7 years, Evander Kane is someone they have to keep no matter what. So that's
interesting. I don't know.
Interesting.
And they have some guys coming up for contract. I think Pavelski's due a deal this summer as well.
Yeah.
So interesting to see what the Sharks are going to do.
Yeah.
Jumbo Joe also needing another deal, right?
Yeah, yeah. See if he signs
if
another
he's
one.
Come
but
back.
Yeah, well, he talked about doing it. And like he's pretty much said, if they want me back, I'm willing to come back and at a discount to do it. But what is that discount? Because he was $7 million last year.
Mm-hmm.
Would it be two? $2 million?
Hopefully. He's going to need to be.
Yeah, he's going to have to come in pretty low.
So. Just initial thought. You saw the 7x7 deal for Evander Kane, 54 points last season. He was kind of like 14 points in 17 games with the Sharks.
Had 5 points in the playoffs, going through 2 rounds, had 4 goals, but most of those came against the Ducks.
He's 26?
A little too long, a little too much. I feel like for someone that's only reached 30 goals once in his career, and that was 7 years ago, I see why San Jose wanted to keep him in the fact that he meshed really well with the team. He kind of fits that mold, and that's a speed, a little bit of an edge, a physical side, and he can score if
Power
he can stay
forward.
Healthy. So, but you look at his numbers, and I just don't see a $7 million guy there. I see maybe 6, I mean, if you're pushing it, but anywhere from 5 to 6. And really, since he's really hasn't had much of a time with your team, you don't really know exactly the guy you're getting, especially if it's a contract year. They tend to overplay or they end up playing well miraculously. Then they get the contract and it doesn't really pan out very well. So I'd be a little bit more hesitant to give him 7 years. That'll be, you know, 33 by the time this contract ends. So I'm thinking, you know, if you do 5 years, he's at 31. And kind of go from there. But, yeah, I would have seen anywhere from, you know, 5 to 6 mil over 5 years made a little bit more sense from the San Jose side. But he hasn't – they're either really hoping he jumps up his game and continues what he did in San Jose, and now he's just found a new home where he can actually produce goals. And so maybe they're gambling a little bit on that. And it might pay off if he really kind of hits that ceiling that, you know, everyone's expecting him to get to, but he just hasn't been there yet.
He hasn't done it. I mean, granted, maybe he's changed with his off-ice issues, and so in San Jose, he seems to be welcomed.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of veterans there. Yeah, he says he loves it there, of course. I mean, who doesn't want to be there over Winnipeg or Buffalo, right?
Especially paying you $7 million. I love it here.
Yeah, this is great. This is the best thing ever. I kind of felt the same way. I was kind of like, that's a lot of change for a guy. That's a lot of change for a guy. But
kudos to his agent.
Yeah, and for him, proving to be worth lighting up when he comes in to San Jose, lighting it up.
Yeah.
That helps your cause a lot when you're talking about a paycheck. And he's a goal scorer, so he's going to get paid, like you said, you and I talked pre-show, you're going to get paid a little more than the guys who don't score a bunch.
Yeah, you can have the same amount of points, but if you score more goals than the other guy, you tend to get paid a little bit more for that, because that's a little bit more rare.
So Greg Wyshynski compared him to Chris Kreider on Twitter. A lot of people disagree with him on that. The numbers all say that it's about the same.
If you look at the names, you'd go, that's not right.
Right. Definitely Evander Kane's way better than Chris Kreider. Uh-huh. The numbers are about the same. Kreider makes about around five.
Yeah.
But even still, Kane does score more goals, and because Kreider's around the 20 mark, Kane's a little above.
He's more dynamic. He's got different aspects to his game, including a speed aspect to his game.
Physicality, too, is a big
one. Physicality.
Especially in the West. Everyone in the West, for some reason, loves the big grinding wall game that everyone loves to play.
Yeah, and when you have to play the Ducks and the Kings that are still kind of those bigger teams, you kind of need that guy a little bit. Now that Jumbo Joe's kind of not going to be, not that he's ever been overly physical, but, I mean, he's been a presence. He's a big guy, and now Evander Kane can be that guy.
So we'll see how he does. 54 points last season. I kind of feel like they should have went around the 4 or 5 year term and then maybe gave him. Hey, man, if they would have given him $7 million for 4 years, I'm okay with that. But I think $49 million over seven, it's just a lot to ask of a guy.
It'll probably look great in the next couple of years, hopefully, if, you know, he kind of continues that trend. But once you start getting after, you know, 5 years, you get close to that 7 year itch, then all of a sudden that contract's maybe not looking so good on a 32-year-old Evander Kane.
Yeah, you never know. That's
you never
a long
know.
Way to go.
Yeah.
So, moving on, the Rangers get a new head coach.
Nice.
They get a guy named David Quinn, who I'd never heard of before. They said that he was their coach, apparently a longtime Boston University coach. Was tapped for the job. He's going to be in charge of a lot of youngsters on this team. There's 7 players under the age of 20 or 24 years or younger. Mm-hmm. So he's basically got his hands full with a bunch of kids and guys with high expectations, like Pavel Buchnevich, who didn't get his ice time under Alain Vigneault.
Yeah.
And then a lot of people were saying he was misused on that fourth line. He should have been playing a lot more minutes and higher up because he could score.
Yeah.
So we'll see how he comes in and kind of brings in his experience with his, I guess, coaching youngsters.
Yeah, it's definitely a change. Alain Vigneault kind of got the reputation of not really trusting the younger players and going with the more veteran-type players. But now that, you know, they said goodbye to Ryan McDonagh and, who was the other guy they got rid of? JT Miller, but he's not really that old. But, it's looks like a departure from what was with Alain Vigneault into this new one with Quinn. He's done most of the AHL. He's done the international stuff at 18 and under. He's been assistant coaches there. So he has a long track in minors and international play, and this will be his real first foray. That doesn't sound right to me.
Foray.
Okay. Into NHL head coaching. You got me. You know there's always those words. but anyway, so this is his first chance at it. And with a younger team, this is a guy who has coached, you know, Jack Eichel coming out of Boston, McAvoy on Boston, even Clayton Keller, who's a runner-up for the Rookie of the Year last year. So this is kind of setting it up. So it's like, you know, we're not going to really fully rebuild. We're keeping Lundqvist. We got some guys, Shattenkirk's back there. We got some veteran presence, but obviously this game is going quicker, younger, and we need someone that knows those kids coming up, and that's this guy. So I feel it's a good signing. It's odd that they brought him in and gave him a Letterman's jacket, though.
Oh, yeah.
That was a little odd.
It's like, oh, hey, welcome from college. Hey. Look what you get.
Yeah, you're part of the club now. Welcome to Delta Gamma Gamma.
Whatever that is.
Yeah, right.
And then another small change that happened in the Western Conference. The Oilers get new assistant coaches. Former Flames head coach Glenn Gulletson goes to the Oilers as an assistant coach, as well as Ducks, a former assistant coach, Trent Yanni. Mm. And then another guy by the name of Viveros, I guess I'm saying his name wrong or right. I don't know.
Is it Foray?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I don't know who he is, but he's got this is strange to me. I mean, normally I just kind of just say this out loud. I'm like, okay, whatever. Glenn Gulliton's going to go there. Who cares? Trent Yanni, yeah. Whatever. But the way the Oilers are setting this up is kind of odd to me. It says the game plan, this is from Jim Matheson on Twitter, is for Yanni to handle the defense and PK. That's fine. It's what he did in Anaheim. Yeah, uh-huh. Makes sense. Viveros and Gulliton will take the power play, which was the league worst last year. Yeah. Yanni and Gulliton and McClellan will be on the bench during the games with Viveros in the press box. And then he comes down and coaches in the third period. It's kind of like he's getting like a rotating, like, okay, well, we're going to ease you into this. Or I just thought that was very odd. Why do you need an extra guy?
I don't know. But if they need another one, I'm available.
Yeah, I mean, I'll sit in the press box.
Yeah, I'll sit in the press box the whole game. I'll just tell you what I think. I can be a goalie spotter.
Yeah.
I can tell you what the goalies are doing. He's making stops. He didn't make that one, though.
I need another hot dog. Can you give me a hot dog? I can't
Beer,
get up.
Please.
I can't get up right now. I'm watching the game.
I'm really focused, a lot of notes to take. I'm kind of working here. It's weird.
I thought that was odd.
I wonder if Edmonton's trying to grab all these coaches from the teams within their division, try and get the inside scoop.
Yeah, how do they play defense? Yeah. We don't know how to play defense.
Hey, you coach Calgary. What do you think they're going to do? Hey, you coach the Anaheim D. How can we exploit them? What's their weaknesses? And they just keep bringing on more guys.
They don't know what they're doing over there in Oil Town, especially from the top down, because they don't know how to put together a team around Connor McDavid, apparently.
Jesus.
Yeah. So then one more little piece before we get to the Ducks. Lou Lamoriello is in as head of hockey ops at Long Island.
Yes. That was the rumor.
All of a sudden, comes to fruition. He kind of declined to comment about it, and then it came around that he was doing it. And then immediately meets with John Tavares, as he should.
Yeah, absolutely. This is problem number one that needs to be solved.
I wonder if this was the move to try to keep Tavares. Like, hey, look what I built when I was in Toronto.
Yeah.
And look what I built when I was in New Jersey. And look, now I'm here. I'm going to build the same thing here. I'm going to change everything here the way it got changed elsewhere. I promise. Here, sign this long-term insane extension and stay with us, and I promise we'll build around you. That has to be the move from ownership by bringing him in, right?
Absolutely. I mean,
and they're going to be firing Gar Snow.
Any minute, hopefully. Obviously it's a move that they bring in a little bit prestige, gives their club a little bit more legitimacy when they've had problems with even, you know, hammering down an arena to play at, let alone, you know, what they're doing in the front office or the head office there. So, I think this is kind of probably the writing on the wall, because when you're president of hockey ops, you get everything has to go through you. And so you get a say in absolutely every aspect of it. And if you've got a great track record as a GM, as, you know, the head office guy, it's tough for players to not acknowledge that. And meeting with Tavares is probably, here's my vision. Here's what it's going to be. This was my vision in Toronto. Look at where they're at now. You know, I mean, they're relevant where they weren't before I got there. Obviously, Austin Matthews helps, but they've got a lot of good pieces that should work, and if management can kind of get it going, I don't see why Tavares couldn't be successful on the island.
Did you hear what Ray Ferraro said about Lou Lamoriello? They asked him about his impact on John Tavares. Okay. He says, yeah, I don't think it matters at all. And then this is a column from LighthouseHockey.com, and it says, insert arena joke, and then Ray Ferraro says, unless Lou's got a shovel and he's going to start digging the arena out quicker.
Right. I mean, Tavares could be done with it anyways, and, you know, it's too little too late. So, you know, time will tell what he's going to do with it. But July 1st, he's still not signed. I don't see him staying.
Oh, come to Anaheim.
Yeah, okay.
Nice segue here. What? Oh, I got you. You ready?
Oh, okay.
This is what some Ducks fans are talking about.
Oh, they say a lot of things.
We're transitioning over. So there was an article that gets put out every single week, as we've talked about before on the show, from Elliot Friedman from Sportsnet. His 31 Thoughts column. This is just one of this is number four on his 31 Thoughts. It says, we probably won't know the truth until training camp, but there's a chance Ryan Kesler does not play in the 2018-2019 season. Anaheim center gutted through 48 regular season and playoff games, his discomfort and pain obvious to teammates and opponents alike. From what I understand, he will not be having surgery because it's already been done. Instead, he's undergoing some aggressive rehab and treatment in an effort to improve the hip area. The team and agent are not commenting, but word is he's not interested in retiring, wants to play, and is doing everything he can to get there. But it might be a situation where he sits out and tries to come back in September of 2019. All of that gets said, and then all of a sudden everyone postulates from that.
Immediately.
Ryan Kessler's not playing hockey for Anaheim anymore. There's articles out, is Ryan Kessler retiring?
Yeah.
He's not going to play next season. These are just – Elliot Friedman's a reporter.
Yes.
Very well-respected.
Absolutely.
Doesn't BS.
Nope.
This is stuff he's hearing from, obviously, people who are in the know, and internally these are thoughts that are going on. He would not. I don't think he would ever misreport something like this because it's concerning a player's health.
I don't think he's okay. Go, continue.
So, I'm not scared to the point of like, okay, great. I guess we're not going to have him because at the same time in my head, I'm like, well, if we don't have him, that's like $7 million in cap space or a little less because of the way that works. It gets opened up for the Ducks IDR, where they need to, you know, fill a role. There's opportunity. Mm-hmm. Wasn't too scared by that prospect. I more or less feel bad for Ryan Kessler. He's a nice guy. He's a heart and soul guy. And nobody wants to see him have to go through that.
Yeah.
But what was your take about everyone freaking out about it?
I think everyone really jumped the gun a little bit. I feel like in reading that same article, I came away with a different perspective on it. And that was just something that I'd already known. And Ryan Kessler had already said out loud, you know, when he was being interviewed, like, well, what are you doing with the hip? We know it's bothering you. And this was either towards the end of the regular season or, you know, at the beginning of the playoffs. And, you know, deadpan, you know, like, well, what are you doing? Everything. Well, what do you mean everything? He goes, I'm doing everything that I can to make this feel good. And they're like, well, what are you rehabbing it? He goes, everything. And he goes, all right, well, you're doing like acupuncture? He's like, I'm doing everything for it. So it's not something that I'm surprised that he's dealing with. And obviously it affected his play through the regular season, playoffs. It wasn't the same shutdown line that was really helpful at also producing offense. So what I didn't read in there is it literally starts off, we won't know until preseason. So it's more or less like, hey, if, you know, from, I could have heard that interview that Ryan Kessler gave towards the end of the season, and I could extrapolate that where he may not get better. And it's not unexpected for me. He puts this out there and then everyone's like, oh my God, I can't believe this. He's not going to play. What are you going to do? Who are we going to trade for? It's just like, whoa. You're worrying about step number 73 and we're still on number 2. So let's wait it out, get there, see what's going on, see how it progresses. He's only been, you know, out a month or a month and a half of hockey. So it's just give it that time of resting to say he's already out and the Ducks should be starting to look for trading. Obviously, I don't know, just like he doesn't know exactly what's going on. But I'm figuring that this is something he's just, you're going to have to wait, let it try and heal, see where it's at when we get a little bit closer to it. So the freak out, I didn't understand. And until I start getting multiple sources saying that this is what it's looking like, then I'm more inclined to believe it. At this point, I feel it's just someone's like, yeah, he was really struggling. What if he can't play? What if he has to sit out a season?
I don't think it's a what if. I think that this is something that
it's a Friedman, possibility, but it's.
I think Friedman heard this.
I think it's a possibility, not a likelihood. And I feel like everyone's taking it as it's likely going to happen. And I'm taking it more of like, well, it's a possibility. But the other possibility is it doesn't happen.
Oh, that's what Friedman's saying, though. He said we won't know.
But everyone's taking it as a likelihood.
He's saying what he's hearing. And when he says what he's hearing, that means usually internal. Yeah. People internally with the team, people close to Ryan Kessler, these are... I guess the way I gathered it was from these are options that are being looked at.
Yeah.
And we don't know how it's going to end until we see what happens in preseason. Yeah. I mean, October's 6 months away.
Yeah. Yeah, we got plenty of time to figure this out.
We got a lot of time.
A lot of rehabs.
5 months away, really. But he's been off the ice for almost 6 months come October, right?
Yeah, I think he needed the rest.
So,
I mean, if you think about it, it'll be 6 months of resting. How much more is a whole another 12 months of resting?
I don't know how bad it was. I mean, apparently it was pretty gnarly.
Yeah, when he's saying he's doing everything and leaves nothing.
Six-inch needles for acupuncture, excruciating pain.
Yeah.
And it came out in that article from earlier this season we talked about. You just mentioned, you know, we all knew what he was going through.
Yeah.
He had a hard time walking, had a hip brace on when he was at the NHL. Was it the NHL Awards?
But he did that right after.
But that
he
was
heard it.
Last season, right?
Yeah.
So this has been a long road for Ryan Kessler. And if he has to sit another year, he's saying he doesn't want to retire. But, I mean, who knows? I'm not going to make any sort of comment about it other than. Let's just wait and see what happens.
Yeah. And then you can also look at Tammy Solani, who had knee problems forever. And then the lockout actually helped his career. He was able to, you know, finally just do the surgery, rehab it for a full year, came back even better than he had been. Not saying that that's necessarily what's going to happen with Kessler. And Kessler's
a bit older than Timu was at that point,
A bit older, and Timu, you know, had, you know, scoring ability and stuff. You know, Kessler ends up having to play a grinding game, so that injury can reoccur because of that. But, yeah, it's just The only thing I had a problem with is everyone was talking it like it's already happened. It's a done deal. The likelihood is high that this is going to be the way. And I'm just like, guys, all he said was, you know, he may miss a season. He might. And everyone was like, oh, he said he's going to miss it. And it's just.
Yeah, it's taken a lot out of context, I feel like. I think Friedman's comments are blowing up to be more than what they need.
Yeah, I think everyone just ran with it. What? He's missing a season, and then just didn't really read it.
Who was there to replace him? I really don't see anybody on the Ducks depth chart that's going to give you what he gives you. Cali Casola is the one guy that has some NHL experience.
I think Henrique would jump up.
Yeah, but then you're going to have to move. I mean, that we've talked before, the top nine on this Ducks team, pretty set. And if you move Kessler out, it's kind of like, okay, who do we bring up to fill a role at center? There's not a lot at center. I mean, you could force Sam Steele in, who just finished Memorial Cup. The Regina Pass, they lost 3-0.
We got to get younger and faster.
Yeah, but I mean, I would rather see him seasoned at least a season in the AHL for one more. Like one year at least. Get him used to that game and then bring him up.
I mean, it's tough to know exactly who's going to jump up from, you know, minors or the college or something like that and try and jump right into the lineup. It's kind of hit or miss. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. You got to kind of feel it out and see where it happens if that turns out to be what the problem is. But if, you know, Kessler's gone and it's a full year that he's gone, that does leave you some money to move around and try and make a play happen where you can get that center depth back a little bit.
It'd be interesting to see what they would do because they always like those bargain Bob prices.
So anyone thinking we're getting Tavares?
Yeah, I know. That's what I was kind of leading into. There's people out there saying, oh, they maybe could swing a deal where they get John Tavares.
No, because he's, in my opinion, he's going to be looking for about $9 million.
Oh, my God. Yeah, he's going to make some cash.
He's going to make a lot. And even with Kessler's contract off the books for a year, where are we after that year? And then we're screwed.
What are they going to give Tavares, like a one-year deal?
Yeah.
Like a one-year flyer. Come win a cup, and then go wherever you want.
Never do that. And if he wanted 1 year and to win a cup, he's not coming to Anaheim. I don't think that's...
I'd go to Vegas.
I don't think it's much of a slam dunk to do it that way. So he's looking to get paid, and he's looking to compete for the Stanley Cup. So you have to have those two criterias.
And you're talking about a team that just got swept.
Yeah, swept in the first round. And, the future is... I like to say rosy. I mean, I think we'll still contend, but we're nowhere near close to a favorite anymore. Like where seasons past, we kind of had our window of being favorites. But hey, maybe we'll pull a Washington.
Ducks are a top 10 team in the league.
Yeah, I think
no longer a top 5.
Yeah,
not a top 3 team.
Yeah, I could even venture outside of top 10 following this playoff performance. So unless things kind of change a lot and we get a little bit speedier, I have a hard time even putting us in the top 10. But contenders, I mean, we'll be contending for playoffs. That's about it.
So a little more bit on the Ducks news, then we'll wrap. Dallas Eakins gets a 3-year contract extension.
I like it.
He was the Ducks' inaugural coach in San Diego, gets another 3 years. So it's been 3 years, gets another 3 years.
Yep.
Two Calder Cup appearances for his teams, so good on him. And he's been very much touted as a guy that brings up players in a system with youth and does well with them. Obviously, look at the Ducks players that have come up, especially on the blue line, as the Ducks have always been talked about, their blue line depth. Apparently, he's helping them out there. So good on the Ducks bringing Eakins back.
Yeah, for sure. And I think with Carlisle having one more year left on this one, that's another show me year. And so either he is, and then they can start talking extension with Carlisle, and if not, then you have a guy who already has some head coach experience at the national level with the Oilers, but also is very familiar with your younger players. And if you're trying to do a youth movement and try and get more speed, who better than the guy who's been coaching that team for 3-4 years at that point, maybe taking the reins and being that next head coach in Anaheim.
God, the goals are going to be good next year. They're going to get Max Jones. They're going to get Sam Steele.
They're starting to load up and see if any of that translates over to the big club.
Yeah. So more help along the way in Anaheim coming soon. Nothing immediate. Yes. That's what we've been griping about. Why not grab the big guy at the deadline? So that's it for us, everybody. Yep. We appreciate you guys tuning in. You heard our Stanley Cup final pick, and we'll be back next weekend with an update on the final, any other news across the league that we can get to you guys. And we'll talk to you guys soon.
Bye, guys.